Hello, everyone. So, the final part of my past was that, I've said it before, but let me give you new details, because this is it. Growing up, I witnessed nymphomania and hypersexuality amongst men, women, and even the non-binary adults as a 5-year-old child. I even witnessed that women would have nymphomania competitions amongst each other. Men would have hypersexuality competitions with each other. And the women would have serial promiscuity competitions with the men. And when I say nymphomania, hypersexuality, I'm talking about uncontrollable ungovernable unmanageable recalcitrant obstreperous intractable incorrigible delinquent disobedient insubordinate turbulent refractory disorderly unruly wild out of control sexual urges. When I talk about hypersexuality, I'm talking about excessive, immoderate, intemperate, imprudent, overindulgent, unrestrained, unrestricted, uncontrolled, unbridled, lavish, extravagant, superfluous, superabundant, exorbitant, extortionate, sky-high, outrageous, unreasonable, preposterous, greedy, avaricious, blood-sucking, and grasping, sexual desires. When I talk about serial promiscuity, this is the organized crime version, not the ethical serial promiscuity, okay? The distinctions matter, but let me keep going. When I'm talking about the organized crime version of serial promiscuity, I'm talking about abnormally humongous sexual interest. They're being intrigued by eroticism and sensuality is so concerning that they needed to see trained professional help. They need therapists. They needed therapist help. Counselor help, coach help, consultant help, psychologist help, psychiatrist help. They needed sexperts help. And their nymphomania, hypersexuality, serial promiscuity, was abusive to the brain's pleasure system and reward system. Abusive to all of their five senses, including the six senses, and abusive of their heart, mind, body, soul, and memories too. And when I say all five senses, I talk about touch, taste, sight, smell, hearing. the sixth sense, instincts, intuition. So that's what I noticed growing up. And many of these organized crime figures were married. Many of these organized crime figures were engaged to be married. And many of these organized crime figures were single. And I'll tell you this. I notice that in that crime world, their version of hypersexuality, nymphomania, and serial promiscuity was of the sexual deviancy, erotic deviancy, sensual deviancy, interpersonal deviancy, and romantic deviancy. Basically, they're... their ways of going about sexuality, sex, romance, interpersonal sensuality, eroticism was of perversion, distortion, misrepresentation, falsification, travesty, misinterpretation, misconstruction, twisting, corruption, subversion, misuse, misapplication, debasement, deviance, deviancy, deviation, unnaturalness, depravity, degeneracy, vice, wickedness, immorality, aberration, abnormality, perversity, irregularity, the debauchery, and the perverting the gift of kinkiness. So these synonyms of these words and these words themselves are the perfect wordings to describe what happened in the crime world I was in. So I say that because now I'm going to lead you to, okay, how did you get in these affairs, Antonio? How did you get with these sex workers? How did you get with all these women? You know, some were mothers, some were not, and you living with them, and some of them had kids, and you was co-parenting with them, and they called you dad, and the ladies, many of them called you daddy and big daddy T, you know, T for Antonio. How did all these things happen? Because of what happened to me when I was 5. So I don't want to make it look like Antonio was just trying to be some stud motherfucker that wanted to run through all these daughters of other women, other men, other non-binary adults. One has everything to do with the other. Growing up, I was taught to devalue my own happiness. Not even undervalue my happiness, like totally devalue my happiness. Which means that I overvalued the happiness of women. Trauma injured my psyche in that manner. And it's weird to say manner because it was all mannerless. Unmannerable. And I can also say that the rape culture that I was forced to witness as a 5-year-old boy was repellent, impermeable, it was revolting, repulsive, disgusting, repugnant, sickening, nauseating, stomach-turning, stomach-churning, nauseous, emetic, vile, nasty, foul, appalling, abominable, hideous, horrible, awful, dreadful, terrible, obnoxious, loathsome, offensive, objectionable, off-putting, distasteful, disagreeable, uninviting, abhorrent, despicable, reprehensible, contemptible, odious, heinous, obscene, hateful, execrable, gruesome, grisly, vomitous, sick-making, ghastly, putrid, horrid, god-awful, gross, gut-churning, yucky, icky, cringe-making, beastly, bogging, noisome, disgustful, loathly, rebarbative, not delightful, not lovely. When I say they had this, the rape cultures had the mindset of, oh, we're impermeable, impervious, resistant, imperviable, and and proof against sexual integrity, erotic integrity, sensual integrity, romantic integrity, interpersonal integrity. That's how bad the and evil the rape culture was at that time. The rape culture was criminalistic because it was instituted by criminals, lawbreakers, offenders, villains, delinquents, malefactors, culprits, wrongdoers, transgressors, sinners, young offenders, old offenders, middle-aged offenders, juvenile delinquents, felons, thieves, robbers, armed robbers, burglars, housebreakers, shoplifters, muggers, rapists, fraudsters, swindlers, racketeers, gunmen, gunwomen, gun children, and gangsters, outlaws, bandits, terrorists, bioterrorists, narco-terrorists, eco-terrorists, cyber-terrorists, agro-terrorists, yakuzas, hold-uppers, crooks, cons, jailbirds, old lags, lifers, baddies, crims, yardbirds, yeggs, lighties, tiffs, tea leafs, cracksmen, crackswomen, crack children, malfeasants, misfeasers, and infractors, miscreants, trespassers, peculators, delfacators, the transports, the trustees, the pickpockets, and the stick-up kids. And many of those who did the nymphomania, hypersexuality, serial promiscuity, and rape culture within organized crime were parents, and the rest were child free. So So, let's get to my sexual past, because I know that you need me to complete the puzzle for you. This is the last piece. Women that I, in the environments I was in, when I was in my early young adulthood as a man, part of my life, which is years ago, the women were nymphomaniac only towards me. They were self-proclaimed sex addicts, strictly and only when it came to me. They were hypersexual with just me and nobody else, because they were victimized by rape culture too. They had similar childhoods. Like me. They had similar childhoods as me. And so, because we both grew up, air quote, grew up in sexually compulsive behavioral environments, sexually impulsive behavioral environments, and people, should I say monsters, bragging about their sexual addiction, their porn addiction, their masturbation addiction, even though the trained professional world has not officially declared those things to be addictions as of yet. They say compulsive and impulsive behaviors instead, because of the whole, it doesn't meet all the addiction criteria, but let's stick to how we were raised. We were around monsters that proclaimed to be sex addicts, porn addicts, masturbation addicts, and erotica addicts. So, the women that I was with decided to have me and them create our own erotica, which is taping each other. So it's basically erotica style porn. We were constantly taping each other at their request. All the tapes have been destroyed permanently. We didn't want to keep the tapes for very long for privacy reasons. We would watch each other and then destroy the tapes. So then what happened was, with the women, I was hypersexual with them. I was a male nymphomaniac when it came to them. I was serially promiscuous with them. Because I didn't know how to recover and recuperate from rape culture, neither did they. And we were overly charged in our libidos and overly active in our skin-to-skin contact fixation. because of how we grew up, air quote. And partly it's because I'm humping around with these women because these women are humping around with me first. That was my mindset at the time. So, a high sex drive is beautiful. A low sex drive is beautiful. A medium sex drive is beautiful. I love ethical monogamy. I love ethical non-monogamy. And I love ethical promiscuity. And I love no sex drive too. So, you know, I'm a sex positive person. I have to say these things. I need to and I want to. But in the context of trauma, these things are all awful. Outside of trauma, these things are lovely. Rape culture, there is never a healthy context for it. Each and every context that you put rape culture in is pure evil. It's rape culture is totally pure evil. Rape culture is totally criminalistic. Rape culture is totally dead wrong. There is no appropriate context for rape culture. Never, ever. Okay? What I'm saying is that it helps you to get a better understanding of why I was with too many women to be counted. Because they grew up like we both grew up seeing too many women sex partners to be counted, too many men sex partners to be counted, too many non-binary adult sex partners to be counted. That's how we grew up. That's why I was with too many women to be counted. And the women I was with, chivalry, gentle manliness, being good and courteous and honorable towards women and girls was non-existent in their lives, just like in mine, referring to our childhoods. So when they met me, in their minds, they said to themselves, I waited far too long. I'm not waiting another second in terms of, I've always wanted a good man. I've always wanted a man that never tries to have sex with me, that he can talk to me and be okay with me never giving him any. And he doesn't call me any misogynistic slurs. He doesn't use he doesn't use crude language regarding women's bodies and genitalia and private body parts and chest and glutes and hips and the waist and their whole bodies. And because I didn't do, because I met their criteria, meaning all their requests that they had in their heart, I met them. I met these criterias without them ever telling me. They just told me, you meet all these criteria, and start telling me all these criteria they had that I just told you. And for me, the only guy that they allowed to say the P word regarding their vaginas was me. The only guy that they say, hey, call me a B, as a term of endearment, was me. And they said, hey, call me the C word, four letter C word, as a term of endearment. And they said, call me the H word, the WH word, as a term of endearment. I was the only guy that they let talk like that. And it took me a while to eventually give in and talk like that because I was so nerve-wracking. Like, but you know, my heart towards ladies now. This is rough for me. And women were like, but I feel respected if you say these words because I know it's never disrespectful when it comes from you. And many women have told me that. So my mindset is like, well, as long as their womanhood and femininity and womanliness is totally protected, I guess it wouldn't hurt for me to say these things, so I would say these things. And I was still checking with them after I said it. I'm like, you know, I have to. You know, if I'm going to say it, if you're going to have me say these things, I have to check with you every time I say it. You know, you have to be okay with that. And the women love that because they're like, wow, it's not slip of the tongue. It's not you getting carried away. It's like, okay, if I meet this demand of yours, you have to meet this demand of mine. And I told them in our dealings with each other, we got to have reciprocity. I'm doing for you, you do for me. And we don't expect reward or recognition for it. And if we do get reward and recognition, it has to be natural. And they enjoyed it. So I would check in with them every time I said these words, and they were like, no harm, no foul. And with me, because it only happened like the women of color I was with, right? Meaning non-white women. They said, well, Antonio, you might, and they said the N-word. Notice I said women of color, non-white women. It took me a while to embrace it. I struggled with it because of the Atlantic slave trade, historicity in history. But they said, well, I'll always check in with you after I say it. And they asked me, honestly, when I called you, each time I called you, how you feel? And I would say, well, I don't feel offended because you gave me a context that makes me feel loved. And they said, that's exactly how I feel when you say these words that have historically applied to women. I don't feel offended either. Now, that's how it worked out. The white women I was with, they never ever addressed me in any racial slurs, even though they were raised to believe the sex stereotypes about black men. They were anti-racist at their core. They just never felt comfortable, and I never even tried to get them to, because they told me, look, I can't bring myself to say it. I just can't. And that was a trigger for them, so I chose to not ever bring it up with them. They told me, and I accepted their trigger. I'm the type of person, once you tell me your trigger, I'm not going to try to talk you out of your trigger. Trauma trigger. So they never said those words to me. They would ask me about these words. They were like, what's the history of these words? And so we would talk about the history of each racial slur, but we would spell out the word. We never said the word. They would spell out the word. And I remember these women, we would even talk about the history of misogynistic slurs. Now with the white women, they felt like the ones I was with, I said, well, since you're uncomfortable with the racial slurs, I won't bring up the misogynistic slurs. So they agreed to that. So that's how me and the white women treated each other. We could use any other curse word except the slurs against women and black people. That's how it was. Because I wanted to be fair to them. Look, I don't want to put you in a situation where you feel this way and I feel this way. So I made life easier for them. Me and the women of color was way different. The white women I was with, eventually they said, well, we can't apply all these sexual stereotypes to all black people. They said, Atone, I got to be honest with you. I don't apply these stereotypes to you out of racism. It's like, that's not my heart. They said, Atone, I got to be honest with you. When it comes to sex, you are a relentless hard worker and smart worker. When it comes to sex, your genitalia is, it's lovely is an understatement. That's what they said. And they said, well, to be honest, down there, Antonio, you're quite the mountaintop. And they said, Antonio, I'm not. They said, Antonio, no, you know, I'm not saying this applies to all black men. They said, Antonio, a lot of what is said about black men, and I'm only saying this about you, not other black men, but what I've been told about black men, it's true when it comes to you, just you. Because I had to educate them that not all these sex stereotypes on the part of black people. And they appreciate that I lovingly corrected the misconceptions they were taught about black men. They said, Antonio, you're so kind to women that I don't have a problem with you being with many women. I just don't, because when you're a good man, they told me women outnumber men. They said, because the women outnumber men, some of us gonna have to share a man. And I don't have a problem sharing a good man with other women. They're like, I'm cool with it. These were the white women saying it, and the women of color made the same statement about these sexual realities of mine. No, they're black men, just me. And they said, they even said to me, I remember it was them saying, well, Antonio, you know, I would be with you regardless of your penis size. But they said, Antonio, your size, let's just say it's a lot of women's dreams out here. Let's just put it poetically. And that's what they told me. They said, I remember they told me that, well, Antonio, you know, the stereotype of, you're right, Antonio, the stereotype of black men being sexually voracious, sexually virile, and they said, you're right, not all black men are that. They said, Antonio, when it comes to you, that is completely awesome, though. They said, I'm just addressing you, you know. They said, I'm addressing you politely and saying, look, there's nothing wrong with a good man. And they said, good man. They said, I didn't put race to it. I'm not being sexist when I say this. And they said, look, I don't mind a good man having his pickings of good women to sexually enjoy. I said, I don't. If you treat a woman right, what's the problem? If you're not even trying to have sex, will you just enjoy her spirit, her soul, her mind, her heart, her memories, her personality, her temperament, and she's the one trying to initiate these sexual encounters, what's the problem? You weren't even trying to do anything. You appreciated her for her. You displayed humility and gratitude towards her. And if she's like, look, I want your clothes off. And they were like, look, Anton, there's nothing wrong with that. They're like, you being sexually voracious, it's chivalry centered. It's gentle manliness centered. So they were like, I don't see the problem. And the women of color felt the same way. They're like, look, a man that never puts his hands on me, a man that never yells at me, a man that never curses me out, never, a man that never calls me out my name, a man that would be here for his kids if I got pregnant, and a man that would protect me, I won't have to tell him, a man that would report the police to me. Hey, Santonio, you fit all these descriptions. You never do all the things that a man should ever say or do to a woman, and all the things that a man should say and do to a woman, that's what you do. And so they're like, look, Antonio, look, man. They said, Tony, I never want you to get married. Please don't get married. Please don't. Because there's not enough men to be married off to women because we outnumber you guys. And they said, look, I can't be mad at other women for being attracted to you for the same reasons I am. Because we all can agree on how awesome you are, Antonio, so that's what happened. And I feel like for me, when I was with the women, I never tried to have sex with them. I never tried to have sex with them first. I never did that to a woman. If anything, if I tried to have sex with her first, it's because she told me to. If we start talking, she's like, Antonio, you know what's in my head. It's time for you to say it. Then I would be the first initiated because she told me it's time for you to initiate it. But I never would initiate sex without a woman telling me to. If she didn't say to, I wouldn't do it. I did it because she expressed voluntary permission for me to do so first. That was the only way I tried first, because she's like, look, now that we have this kind of attraction, you must take the lead right now. So that's what happened. Now with the women, usually they were the first to initiate sex with me. And so what happened was, you know, I gave them my consent to do that after they initiated, but we gave each other consent to initiate sex with each other through our body language, our flirting, our innuendos, indirect statements. So that's why they usually were the first to do it. I feel like as I got older, I met other kinds of women. This is why sex is such a multifaceted, sensitive, reality for me of a topic, because I met other kinds of women that were so used to men proving how studs they were. There were other women encouraging me to get married. These were women that were devout Christians, devout Muslims, devout Judaism practitioners, devout Hindus, devout Buddhists, devout in churches, mosques, temples, synagogues, centers, monasteries, and tabernacles. They were devout in their holy books, the religious texts. So I met women who said, "Antonio, you're not the type that just is inside and outside of women all the time. I could see you being a love and relationship expert, and I could see you leading like having your own global couples ministry. I could see you being a parent coach, a parenting expert, and you personally having your own biological offspring." They're like, "Antonio, I could see you healing marriages. I could see you doing affair recovery because you have this wisdom about overcoming adultery is very much needed." And how they learned that about me was, with these women in particular, I didn't tell them that part of my sexual past, but I was just very common sense approach with it, that's why. And said, "Yeah, Tony, I could see you doing affair recovery coaching. I could see you being a marriage and family therapist, a couples counselor. And, you know, I could see you being on talk shows and TV shows about how to go about romance correctly according to each personality and temperament of each couple." Of course, I met some ethical non-monogamy practicing women that are like, "Antonio, I could see you being an ethical non-monogamy relationships expert." But let me get back to other women. The women that were into monogamy saying, "Antonio, I could see you role modeling monogamy well for men out here." I feel like with women. I'm talking about the ones that are attracted to me. I know that I decided to be very sensitive, exceedingly gentle, and monumentally generous. When I talk about marital status, children, living arrangements, family man life, pet owning, I'm very sensitive about the subjects. As I get older, I get a better understanding of how to approach those subjects when it comes to myself. And in the past, I would have just been in your face in a polite way about me not doing family man life, but now I'm no longer that way. I don't even talk like that anymore because that's, you know, because of the autism moms and black women and a lot of church women who are looking for, well, I shouldn't say looking for, but who feel a healthy need for a solid man of valor and virtue. I have to mind my P's and Q's on that respectfully. So, because autism moms, black women, and church women are the, from my experience, are the most attentive to family woman living, and they are the most sensitized to it from my experience. I'm not generalizing, I'm just only talking about my life here. And I decided to no longer say I won't be a family man because of it. So it's not lying, it's me going, okay, I understand that in terms of the dating pool and the shortage of good men in our world, I could see why it would hurt their feelings for me to keep saying that. I won't be saying that anymore. Plus, even if the dating pool and available good men was available, I still wouldn't say it because I think their sensitivity would just be as strong because it's just their nature, which I think is awesome. So, growing up, I grew up with the early exposure to sex and sexuality at the age of 5. So, for at least 20 years, from 5 to 25 years of age, I was serially promiscuous. I was only with girls my age as a kid. When I became a man, I was with women my age, but mostly generations ahead of me. That's the most polite way to put it. And I have rewired and retrained my brain and my psyche to behave differently, meaning I no longer do non-monogamy out of trauma. And I no longer attempt monogamy out of trauma either. And I have overcome the sexual hypermasculinity. This is what I overcame. I overcame callous sexual attitudes toward women. I overcame the belief that violence is manly. I overcame the indoctrination that the experience of danger as exciting. I overcame the emphasis on physical strength, aggression, and human male sexuality. I overcame the exaggeration of male stereotypical behavior. I overcame the sexual physical aggression towards women and perceived gay men. Now, I was taught these things. By nature, I'm none of these things. I want to make it clear, I never do abuse. I never do crime. I never do violence. I never do criminality. I never do victimization. By nature, I never do these things. So I was never abusive towards women, verbally, non-verbally, in any kind of way. Never have been, never will be. I was never abusive towards LGBTQI+ people, verbally, non-verbally, never have been, never will be. I'm just saying, I overcame being taught these things. I overcame the macho man personality trope. I overcame the outward physical aspects of violence, danger, and sexual aggression I was taught. I overcame being taught that emotional self-control is a sign of warped toughness, like acting calm when really I should just go get help. Real men don't cry. Real men don't talk a lot. And, real men just suck it up and kiss it up and, hold your chin up and go make it happen. Overcame all of those lies. And I overcame compulsory heterosexuality. I overcame being victimized by heteronormativity, cisnormativity, cissexism, heterosexism. I overcame being accused of hypomasculinity. I overcame hegemonic masculinity. I overcame machismo. I overcame male privilege. I overcame manosphere. I overcame the obsession of virility. I overcame toxic masculinity. Boys will be boys. I overcame toxic masculism. Let me see here. Overcame the obsession with the phallic architecture. I overcame the trans exclusionary radical feminism. I overcame trans misogyny. I overcame trans misogynoir. Let's see. I overcame amatornormativity. I overcame sexual normativity. I overcame mononormativity. And how I overcame these things was through self-education. Through research, through hypotheses, through studying. And plus, I'm a consumer of psychology articles, so that helped me to let go of all of these brainwashing tactics I was telling you about. I overcame non-binary discrimination, I overcame discrimination against intersex people, overcame discrimination against LGBTQ plus people, overcame phobias regarding femme people, F-E-M-M-E, I overcame bisexual erasure, I overcame straight washing. These are things I grew up with growing up, and I overcame these things by just studying the human rights positions on these topics too, so that helped me out. Man, I overcame misogyny, sexism, chauvinism as well. Overcame domestic violence, domestic sexual violence, intimate partner violence, intimate partner sexual violence by reading what therapists had to say about these subjects. So, now I want to talk about this. In regards to my childhood, I mean, well, I already talked about that, okay. And I already talked about the sexual past part, okay. So the last thing I talked about is just religion part, and we're done with the episode. Okay, I covered everything. So, my last statement on religion, in terms of the negative part, I've come to, with women, I'm talking about the ones that are attracted to me. I know that I decided to be very sensitive, exceedingly gentle, and monumentally generous. When I talk about marital status, children, living arrangements, family man life, pet owning, I'm very sensitive about the subjects. As I get older, I get a better understanding of how to approach those subjects when it comes to myself. And in the past, I would have just been in your face in a polite way about me not doing family man life, but now I'm no longer that way. I don't even talk like that anymore because that's, you know, because of the autism moms and Black women and a lot of church women who are looking for, well, I shouldn't say looking for, but who feel a healthy need for a solid man of valor and virtue. I have to mind my P's and Q's on that respectfully. So, because autism moms, Black women, and church women are the, from my experience, are the most attentive to family woman living, and they are the most sensitized to it from my experience. I'm not generalizing, I'm just only talking about my life here. And I decided to no longer say I won't be a family man because of it. So it's not lying, it's me going, okay, I understand that in terms of the dating pool and the shortage of good men in our world, I could see why it would hurt their feelings for me to keep saying that. I won't be saying that anymore. Plus, even if the dating pool and available, good men was available, I still wouldn't say it, because I think their sensitivity would just be as strong, because it's just their nature, which I think is awesome. So, growing up, I grew up with the early exposure to sex and sexuality at the age of 5, so for at least 20 years, from 5 to 25 years of age, I was serially promiscuous. I was only with girls my age as a kid. When I became a man, I was with women my age, but mostly generations ahead of me. That's the most polite way to put it. And I have rewired and retrained my brain and my psyche to behave differently, meaning I no longer do non-monogamy out of trauma, and I no longer attempt monogamy out of trauma either. And I have overcome the sexual hypermasculinity. This is what I overcame. I overcame callous sexual attitudes toward women. I overcame the belief that violence is manly. I overcame the indoctrination that the experience of danger as exciting. I overcame the emphasis on physical strength, aggression, and human male sexuality. I overcame the exaggeration of male stereotypical behavior. I overcame the sexual physical aggression towards women and perceived gay men. Now, I was taught these things. By nature, I'm none of these things. I want to make it clear, I never do abuse, I never do crime, I never do violence, I never do criminality, I never do victimization. By nature, I never do these things. So I was never abusive towards women, verbally, non-verbally, in any kind of way. Never have been, never will be. I was never abusive towards LGBTQI+ people, verbally, non-verbally, never have been, never will be. I'm just saying, I overcame being taught these things. I overcame the macho man personality trope. I overcame the outward physical aspects of violence, danger, and sexual aggression I was taught. I overcame being taught that emotional self-control is a sign of warped toughness, like acting calm when really I should just go get help. Real men don't cry. Real men don't talk a lot. And, real men just suck it up and kiss it up and, hold your chin up and go make it happen. Overcame all of those lies. And I overcame compulsory heterosexuality. I overcame being victimized by heteronormativity, cisnormativity, cissexism, heterosexism. I overcame being accused of hypomasculinity. I overcame hegemonic masculinity. I overcame machismo. I overcame male privilege. I overcame manosphere. I overcame the obsession of virility. I overcame toxic masculinity. Boys will be boys. I overcame toxic masculism. Let me see here. Overcame the obsession with the phallic architecture. I overcame the trans exclusionary radical feminism. I overcame trans misogyny. I overcame trans misogynoir. Let's see. I overcame amatornormativity. I overcame sexual normativity. I overcame mononormativity. And how I overcame these things was through self-education. Through research, through hypotheses, through studying. And plus, I'm a consumer of psychology articles, so that helped me to let go of all of these brainwashing tactics I was telling you about. I overcame non-binary discrimination. I overcame discrimination against intersex people. Overcame discrimination against LGBTQ plus people. Overcame phobias regarding femme people. FEMME. I overcame bisexual erasure. I overcame straight washing. These are things I grew up with growing up, and I overcame these things by just studying the human rights positions on these topics, too. So that helped me out. Man, I overcame misogyny, sexism, chauvinism as well. Overcame domestic violence, domestic sexual violence, intimate partner violence, intimate partner sexual violence by reading what therapists had to say about these subjects. So, now I want to talk about this. In regards to, my childhood, I mean, well, I already talked about that, okay. And I already talked about the sexual past part. Okay. So the last thing I talked about is just religion part. And we're done with the episode. Okay, I covered everything. So, My last statement on religion, in terms of the negative part, I've come to, when I was a child, there were the religious narcissist criminals who would give love offerings and tithes and offerings to the church. So imagine those doing blackmailing, tithing to the church. Imagine those doing loan sharking of money at very high interest rates, tithing to the church. Imagine those doing assassinations, tithing to the church. Imagine those doing backyard breeding, tithing to the church. Imagine those doing bombings, tithing to the church. Imagine those doing bookmaking and illegal gambling, tithing to the church. Imagine those doing confidence tricks, forging early release prison documents and copyright infringement, tithing to the church. Imagine those doing counterfeiting of intellectual property, metal theft, fencing, kidnapping, tithing to the church. Imagine those doing smuggling, tithing to the church. Imagine those doing people smuggling, tithing to the church. Imagine those doing sex trafficking, drug trafficking, and arms trafficking, tithing to the church. Imagine those doing impersonating armored truck drivers, tithing to the mosque. Imagine those doing oil smuggling, antiquity smuggling, organ trafficking, and identity document forgery, tithing to the mosque. Imagine those doing contract killing, money laundering, bribery, seduction, electoral fraud, and insurance fraud, tithing to the mosque. Imagine those doing point shaving, price fixing, cargo theft, via fictions pickup, illegal tax gap operation, tithing to the temples and synagogues. Imagine those doing illegal dumping of toxic waste, illegal trading of nuclear materials, military equipment smuggling, nuclear weapon smuggling, passport fraud, tithing to the temples and the synagogues. Imagine those doing providing legal immigration and cheap labor, trading in endangered species, and trafficking in human beings. Tithing to the temples and the synagogues. Imagine those doing business labor racketeering activities such as skimming casinos, insider trading, setting up monopolies in industries such as garbage collecting, construction and cement pouring, bid rigging, getting no show and no work jobs, political corruption and bullying, tithing to the churches, the mosque, and the synagogues. And then, imagine those with an organized crime group seeking out corrupt public officials and executive law enforcement and judicial roles so that their criminal records and activities in the black market can avoid or at least receive early warnings about investigation and prosecution. Pretending to be Christians, pretending to be Muslims, and pretending to be of Judaism. Pretending to be Buddhists and Hindus too. So imagine organized crime groups providing a range of legal services and goods, and often victimizing businesses through the use of extortion or theft and fraud activities like hijacking cargo trucks and ships, robbing goods, committing bankruptcy fraud, also known as bust out, insurance fraud or stock fraud, insider trading, pretending to be Christians, pretending to be Muslims, pretending to be of Judaism, pretending to be Hindus, and pretending to be Buddhists. Imagine organized crime groups also victimize individuals by car theft, either for dismantling at shops or for export, art theft, metal theft, bank robbery, burglary, jewelry, engines, theft and heist, shoplifting, computer hacking, credit card fraud, debit card fraud, Medicare fraud, Medicaid fraud, Social Security fraud, economic espionage, embezzlement, identity theft, and securities fraud, pump and dump scams, pretending to be Christians, pretending to be mosques, pretending to be Muslims, pretending to be churches, pretending to be of Judaism, pretending to be temples, pretending to be synagogues, pretending to be Buddhists and Hindus, pretending to be monasteries and tabernacles, pretending to be centers, pretending to be houses of worship. And then imagine those organized crime groups who are defrauding national, state, and local governments by bit rigging public projects, counterfeiting money, smuggling or manufacturing untaxed alcohol, rum running or cigarettes, butt lugging, and providing immigrant workers to avoid taxes, who claim to be godly, holy, religious, pious, and devout because they self-proclaim to be saintly, to be saints too. That was a part, all of these things were a part of my childhood. So imagine those who use organized crime headquarters as import-export companies, churches, mosques, temples, synagogues, centers, monasteries, tabernacles, check cashing stores, tattoo parlors, zoos, online dating sites, liquor stores, motorcycle shops, banks, hotels, ranches and plantations, electronic stores, beauty salons, real estate companies, daycares, framing stores, taxi cab companies, phone companies, shopping malls, jewelry stores, model agencies, dry cleaners, pawn shops, pool halls, clothing stores, freight companies, charity foundations, youth centers, recording studios, sporting goods stores, furniture stores, gyms, insurance companies, security companies, law firms, and private military companies. Corporations, police forces, and they all claim to be of the Most High Jehovah, as well as abiding by the Most High Jehovah in every which way. Despite being a part of street gangs, outfits, gangs, crime families, mafias, mobs, crime rings, syndicates, authoritarian regimes, separatists, rebel forces, and terrorist groups. Even though they would claim to be full of the Holy Spirit, divinely inspired by God, and an adherent of Jesus Christ. Let that fully sink in. And as a 5-year-old child, I was the only one accurately living out the Bible, accurately quoting the Bible, accurately living out the hymns, accurately singing the hymns, accurately living out the sermons, accurately reciting the sermons, accurately living out the praise and worship, and accurately expressing praise and worship. That's why the religious narcissistic criminals saw me as a threat. The bodyguard team of mine at the time in the crime world ended up killing all of them, because the religious narcissistic criminals were the most arrogant, haughty spirited, vainglory, vanity, greedy criminals that nobody liked. It's a tragic irony that the ones who said thou shalt not kill ended up being killed, even though they killed others. Let that sink in too.